Welcome to yet another edition of Flash Friday.
As I've come to call it, my weekly check-in with all things going on in the world, because otherwise I don't know and don't care. Yay!
Woo!
How can you be so cynical, Paul? The world's actually a great and wonderful place.
Hey, I tune in one day a week.
That's better than a lot of people.
because you're forced to, basically.
Yeah. I tune in one day a week. People don't look at it.
But there's often a gun off screen pointed at Paul. If he doesn't watch the news, we shoot him.
Nearly one in three American workers run out of money before payday, even those who are earning over $100,000.
Wow, our country's so great, dude. Wow, we're doing so awesome.
Wait a minute now. Hold on. If you're making $100,000 a year and you're running out of money before every payday, you're living beyond your means.
Going extra light at the grocery store, cutting down on medical supplies, buying clothing and household supplies secondhand. These are just some of the ways Americans are making it work when money is tight. For about a third of Americans, this is a regular financial stress, with 32% running out of money before their next paycheck hits, according to a new survey fielded by Salary Finance of over 2,700 U.S. adults working at companies with over 500 employees. Amy, 36, is intimately familiar with running short on cash and using these workarounds, especially during tax season. That's in spite of the fact that she and her husband make about $50,000 a year, just short of the average household income in the U.S.
Now, the thing I really wonder about the story is, where do they live? Because your income really is greatly affected by where you live. Obviously, you live in San Francisco, $50,000 a year is basically just poverty. Like, you can't even live there, essentially. Like, you must be living in some subsidized
housing. It says here,
housing.
Even people who are making over $200,000 are running out of money between paychecks. 32%.
That's just
bad financing,
yeah,
right there.
But there could also be people living in like very high cost living areas, like,
yeah,
New
like
York
San
City,
Francisco or
New
York.
Yeah, Manhattan, those other places. I mean, and I guess you could say, well, they could commute somewhere, but that might not be necessarily practical.
This year, they've opted also to cut down some of her husband's CPAP machine supplies in an effort to find a way to save. We've been fortunate to not have many unexpected bills pop up over the past couple of years. We've been able to hold fairly steady lately, but it's scary, of course, she added, saying she's fearful they'll need a new roof soon, a huge expense. We're okay, but we're also just one bad day away from things turning horrible,
so that's what
Amy says.
So for that roof problem, those people need to have a quote-unquote tree fall on the roof.
All right, so this is about the higher end of this.
Sure.
Living paycheck to paycheck affects all income levels. Contrary to popular belief, this is not just an issue for people at the lower end of the income spectrum. Dan Macklin, Salary Finance U.S. CEO and co-founder of SoFi, tells CNBC, Make It, about 31% of respondents earning over $100,000 also regularly experience a budget shortfall before payday. For many, it's the rising cost of living, including food, housing, education, and medical expenses, that creates the squeeze. Over the past year, basic costs increased by 2.3%, according to the Bureau of Labor Statistics Consumer Price Index. The cost of medical care rose 4.6% in 2019, the largest year-over-year increase since 2007, the BLS reports. Housing also jumped 3.2% last year, while education expenses rose 2.1%.
I just want to know how
prices increased 1.8%.
How did these six-figure salary people get themselves, like, what are they doing?
We had to cut back and get the cheaper olives for our martini parties.
You know, like, what are you doing? Like, I get it at the lower end of the spectrum because, yeah, there's a minimum standard of living that you have to maintain, and that can be hard. But at $100,000, you should be making enough money to have, you know, what you need.
Not necessarily.
But what are they putting them? Because, like, if I was making $100,000 a year, I'd be fucking fine.
Yeah, but that's you as like one as one dude.
Right.
I mean, if you have a whole family, now you can say those are personal choices, and
that's 100% a personal choice.
Yeah, but I mean, like, look, the society you've advocated for, I think, I mean, aren't you, Paul, a person that's honestly argued for, like, we need to take care of everyone? So it's like, I think a big stress for these people, obviously, is their medical expenses and other expenses that are put off onto families. Like, the cost of healthcare in this country is so unaffordable. The cost of housing is rising tremendously. It's in some areas up over 40 to 60%. I think it's just these people with inflation and everything cannot keep up. I mean, yeah, maybe these people with $100,000, maybe there's something in their budget that they're wasting money. Unless we actually look at those individuals, I don't know.
They're living in a bigger house than they can afford. They had too many kids than they could afford to support on their salary. Like,
you're probably right.
They're just putting them, like at the lower end, once again, I understand, but at that fucking $100,000 end, just bad life decisions at that point.
Almost half of working Americans surveyed by Salary Finance, 48%, say they don't have any money specifically set aside for emergencies.
Yeah, that's the worst thing about this whole thing.
So, yeah, I mean, like, whatever the reason, I mean, like, it seems like it's almost across the board. I mean, people are just, I mean, it doesn't really seem like it even really goes down too much when people have more money.
It's crazy to see less than 15,000, 50%, and then looking at 130,000, 159,000, 47%.
So, 40% of people making over 200,000.
I mean, yeah. I mean, at some point, you do have to question why this is happening. I mean, it seems to me more than anything, it's just financial illiteracy and not understanding the obligations you're taking on when you purchase a home or a vehicle, or whatever it is.
I think a lot of it might also have to do with people. You know, they have a standard of living,
yeah,
that was once affordable to them, but sure, as prices have risen, their wages haven't risen to compensate, they just end up in a situation where the life that was once feasible is no longer feasible, but they're not willing to let it go.
There's two practical ways to live. You can live at your means, or you can live below your means. If you try to live above your means, this is how you end up.
Well, and, you know, I think, like, in America, a lot of people are encouraged to live above their means because it's like...
With credit.
Yeah, I mean, like, every fucking day I probably throw away 3 or 4 pieces of mail that's just encouraging me, like, hey, you want to get more debt? We got this credit card for you.
We got some debt for you here.
We got this loan you can get. We got this credit card you can get. We got all these fucking things. And Americans are tremendously in credit card debt. And people are people have just lived way beyond their means for a long fucking time.
Oh, dude, I just paid off most of my credit card debt. And I'll tell you what, like, at this point, that's what I've just learned in life. It's like, man, I don't want that shit anymore. There's a temptation to it that's like, yeah, cool, I'm going to get this. But ultimately, you're going to pay the price. You're going to pay a lot more than you think.
I think the real problem here is that cost of living has gone up and wages haven't gone up to match it.
Yes.
So I think that so that's why you see this across all income levels, because, you know, wages just haven't risen.
Yeah, healthcare is rising for everyone. Yeah. Food costs are rising for everyone.
But wages are not rising for everybody.
No, very few people.
So I think that's probably why you see this across the board like this, regardless of fucking income level.
But I think the argument is they haven't kept pace. When you're making $200,000 a year, you know, at that point...
You should be able to look at what you're doing and make some fucking choices. Yeah,
you have so much mobility at that level, unless you've literally put yourself in a position of having 8 kids, and, you know, and that's your bad.
Yeah,
like, nobody can afford to have fucking 8 kids.
At $25,000 a year, it's a lot more understandable why someone is... It's hard to make ends meet. You know what I mean?
Like, what choices... Like, at $200,000, if you got a mortgage that's just blowing your...
$7,000 a month or something.
You can move to a smaller house. Like, what can you do if you're making $25,000 a year and living in a studio apartment?
Nothing.
Like, where do you go from that?
Yeah, the streets.
So...
This is a headline here from Reuters. Pete Buttigieg finishes second in New Hampshire primary, Amy Klobuchar third.
What about who won?
No.
What about who won?
That's not the story. That's not the story.
That's why I did the episode on them. People were like, duh. But it's like, no, I know it's duh, but you have to fucking prove your case. You can't just go, duh, we're right. I hate that argument from people. It's like, it's obvious. Prove it's fucking obvious. And this is just more proof. Add to the fucking stack of fucking proof. The media is so biased against fucking Bernie Sanders. And whether you agree with him or not, I mean, what kind of fucking headline is this? Who's number two and who's number three? Oh, I saw a fucking story on Yahoo News. I got all these different news sources like, Klobuchar surges.
And look, San Francisco 49ers take second place in the Super Bowl.
Yeah, that was the headline for that,
it's
wasn't
like,
it?
Come on.
Look at their follow-up to it, too, down below. For the full rundown of the primary, click on this link that has a picture of somebody that finished in fourth. You know what I mean? It's like, what?
So, yes, of course, Sanders wins in New Hampshire.
Sanders edges Buttigieg.
Yeah, barely.
Edges him. Ooh, yeah.
Oh.
Ooh. Ooh la la. Nice.
I was watching coverage of that last night, and like the autos, like, subtitles, those are closed captioning, called Buttigieg. That's what I call him now, Buttigieg. He is the great Buddha.
And look at this buffoonish picture they picked of fucking Sanders. They couldn't find a picture of him looking normal, standing at his fucking podium, giving a speech or something. They had to pick this weird puff-mouthed fist pump picture.
Puff a fish.
Like, yeah, look at how Buttigieg is portrayed here. Like the divine fucking blessing of Jesus Christ himself has descended on Buttigieg. He looks great in all these. Even Biden gets a fucking decent treatment. Then look at this crazy shit they show for Bernie.
Yeah.
Everybody else gets to look all presidential and normal. But Bernie Sanders, they just find the wackiest fucking frame they've got. Yeah, go with that one. Go with the one where his suit looks like it's fucking buttoned up crooked and he's puffing his cheeks out.
Bernie Sanders won New Hampshire's presidential primary, edging moderate rival Pete Buttigieg and scoring the first ever clear victory in the Democratic Party's chaotic 2020 nomination fight.
The first victory was pretty clear, too.
Yeah, he won by 6,000 votes in the first round and 2,500 in the second round, so he won. Although I guess he doesn't win on delegates for some reason. Thanks, Iowa.
Get ready for more of that, by the way.
Yeah, I'm already ready. In his Tuesday night win, the 78-year-old Sanders, a self-described Democratic socialist, beat back a strong challenge from the 38-year-old former mayor of South Bend, Indiana. The dueling Democrats represent different generations, see divergent paths to the nomination, and embrace conflicting visions of America's future.
Yeah, as long as they're clear that Buttigieg represents the fucking... A bunch of fucking old boomers who were totally out of touch.
And yeah, let's be clear about the 38-year-old version. I mean, like, contrary to what this... If you just read this paragraph in isolation, you would assume Sanders represents the old fogies and Buttigieg represents the youth vote. But it's the exact fucking opposite. Flip that. As Sanders and Buttigieg celebrated, Amy Klobuchar scored an unexpected third-place finish.
Three paragraphs in, it's already basically become a fucking Buttigieg-Klobuchar article.
Buttigieg. Yeah, Bernie won, but Buttigieg and Klobuchar, the real story. The real story here. Elizabeth Warren and Joe Biden posted disappointing fourth and fifth place finishes. They're not going to get these delegates out of the state because you got to meet a 15% threshold.
Yeah, so they're done.
So here, I thought we'd just take a look at some the upcoming events real quick that are going to happen in this process. Right now we're on February 12th. So we had the New Hampshire presidential primaries last night. The next thing, that's Wisconsin's 7th Congressional District special primaries. I don't think that matters very much. The real next thing is the Democratic primary debate in Las Vegas happening on the 19th. On the 22nd, we're going to have the caucuses. That's right, more caucuses. Joy. Then we get another presidential debate on the 25th. In South Carolina.
Jesus.
Ramping up them debates. Then on the 29th, South Carolina is going to... Oh, there's a 29th. It's a leap year, I guess.
It is.
South Carolina Democratic presidential primary on the 29th of February. And we could talk about March, but whatever. We don't need to talk about March.
Well, March is what's called Super Tuesday. We're going to have a ton of states vote.
Yeah,
so
this is the huge Super Tuesday thing coming up.
So there's going to be a lot of fucking people dropping out after that, of course.
That's when you have Virginia, Vermont, Utah, Texas, Tennessee, Oklahoma, North Carolina, Minnesota, Massachusetts, Maine, Democrats abroad presidential primary, Colorado, California, Arkansas, American Samoa, I guess. I didn't even know they got
the eyes of the world will be on American Samoa.
Alabama. Alabama.
When is our fucking state vote, TJ? When
Vote? Not for a little while. Let's see. Damn. We're doing it on April 4th.
So when does this all wrap up? When do we actually fucking know?
Let's see. Not until...
Fucking June? Oh, my God.
I guess. Let's see. No, it's still going.
Okay, so June.
Yeah, the Democratic National Convention is in July, so...
Oh, wonderful.
So you just have half a year more, and then you're good.
You act like it's going to end now. Campaigning never stops now.
No, they'll just keep going.
We might get a 2 or 3 month break once the election's over. I mean, if we get Trump gets reelected, there will be no break. The campaign, you know, will just continue. Do you think he's going to continue to do these fucking rallies as hard when he can't be reelected?
Oh, of course.
Yeah, and we'll actually talk a little bit about that.
If Trump's reelected, then he's basically going to pick the successor.
I mean, even if Trump loses, I think he's still going to do rallies. I don't know. That's just the way he is. So let's look at the next couple ones coming up. So we got Nevada coming up. Sanders is slightly ahead in Nevada, and it's actually a state where Biden is competitive. And you see Buttigieg And Klobuchar is not even fucking ticking the needle in fucking Nevada. She's about 3.9%. I guess that's something.
Yeah.
Buttigieg, not really. I mean, you know, maybe he's going to get sort of a boost from doing well in these last two primaries and being kind of like neck and neck with Sanders. But as of now, the polling hasn't reflected that. But of course, we don't know what that's going to if there's going to be a jump in light of New Hampshire.
A lot of people have said it's basically just because, you know, New Hampshire is not a very diverse state, nor is Iowa.
Right, they start with the two whitest states.
So
ever.
Yeah, so basically, like Buttigieg has struggled for any minority support. Klobuchar, I'm not really sure on that front, but I know Sanders enjoys probably the most diverse level of support. Biden has been fading. Maybe Biden will win this one. Maybe he can eke something out.
So right now, Biden is in second place in the state, but these numbers could all undergo dramatic change now that New Hampshire's happened. A lot of people who were on the team Biden might say, hey, we got to jump this ship. It's not going anywhere. And yeah, maybe so, they'll jump over to Klobuchar or Buttigieg, and you'll see their numbers enjoy it.
But Steyer is doing well in the state. Yes. Where's Bloomberg at? 6.5.
Bloomberg is about
6.5. Yeah, so I mean,
Bloomberg is really not trying to compete. Bloomberg is trying to do a sweeping kind of Super Tuesday thing. That's his strategy.
I don't think it's going
to
work.
I heard the strategy of, like, the DNC strategy, or at least some scuttlebutt about what it might be. They're using Buttigieg right now to siphon votes away from Sanders, or delegates away from Sanders. They're hoping to force a contested convention.
Right.
And then they're going to throw their fucking support behind Bloomberg.
Awesome. So here is what's going on in South Carolina, where Biden has enjoyed a comfortable lead for a while now.
Yeah. I mean, it looks like it's dipping to record lows as we speak.
Yes, it is. So as you guys probably know by now, and we're going to we'll take a little closer look at Biden in a minute, but Biden's support is doing exactly what I predicted it would do, what other commentators like Kyle Kalinske predicted it to do. It's basically collapsing. You know, I thought it was going to happen sooner, but I'm not surprised at all to see it's happening. I mean, we've seen his debate performances. We've watched most of the debates here, and we've been
Biden's still
chronically unimpressed with Biden's performances.
I mean, Biden might still limp in and win this. That he might not win it by a lot, but let's even drop 7 points.
Well, his lead at this point is pretty comfortable, but actually, we're looking at a 538 graph here. 538 actually is giving the edge at this point. This is overall who they expect. This is the most likely results based on their algorithms at this point.
I like no one.
So Sanders is 2-5, about 37% chance. No one is 1-3, about 35% chance. So basically no one is the scenario Paul just described of the contested convention where no one has enough delegates.
Right. Delegates are split.
Then it becomes, that's when, if that happens, things are going to get very fucking interesting. Fucking interesting.
It kicks the door wide open to super delegate fuckery.
Yes, it does.
And that's exactly what's going to happen. If they can force a contested convention, the DNC is going to do everything they can to undermine Bernie Sanders.
Oh, and, absolutely.
If he's pretty much the leading one and they do that, I think they do that at their own peril, because that pretty much just ensures Trump's reelection.
Biden, 1-6. Buttigieg, 1-20. Bloomberg, 1-30. Warren, 1-30. All others, less than 1-100.
No chance, essentially.
So basically, everyone else in the race should just get the fuck out at this point. Clear the stage, let the fucking...
I mean, they're starting to.
Yeah, Tulsi seems like she's going to stick it out till the end, wow, despite the fact that she has no chance.
she has
whatever. So we have some other forecasts here. There's a range of forecasted outcomes there. You see, these are different delegate counts by the end of this. I keep saying delicate for some reason.
They're delicate.
So, you know, they have some different. It looks like, I mean, you know, it's pretty hard. I mean, Biden's got this little block here of maybe support. I don't know. So they have some predictions here about who's going to win these various caucuses. Now, obviously, some of these are so far. I mean, like, the further out they are, the harder it is to predict. It's hard to predict these things days before, especially with a lot of voters still undecided at this point. Who's going to win the Nevada caucuses? They say Sanders. Who's going to win the South Carolina primary? I was surprised to see they're saying Sanders for this, because Biden is so far ahead in those polls.
It looks like they're predicting that Biden's numbers just basically fall off a cliff.
Yeah,
in the run up.
It's really not much of a stretch to believe that at this point. California, Sanders strongly favored in California.
It's not too shocking.
He's doing really well there now. I think he lost there to Clinton last time. So Sanders is favored to win in Texas.
Really?
Yes,
I'm surprised to
among
hear that.
Democrats there.
Well, I know Democrats. That's what, but I'm even surprised there.
Sanders is favored to win in North Carolina. He's favored to win in Virginia. He's favored to win in Massachusetts. He's favored to win in Minnesota. Is there any state that he's not favored to win in? Is
Colorado.
Colorado is favored to win. Tennessee is favored to win. Biden is favored to win in Alabama. There you go.
All right. Good job, Joe Biden. You got Alabama.
Sanders going
to a state that no Democrat's going to carry to begin
Arkansas
with.
Arkansas and Utah. At this point, Sanders is just fucking doing pretty well everywhere. It looks like they're just kind of predicting Sanders is going to win most of these states at this point.
Not Alabama.
Now, a lot of those states do not have a tremendous amount of polling going on right now, so that's probably based a lot on national polls and just demographics there.
Well, California and Texas are two huge states.
But California, there actually are polls coming out, and Sanders has been doing very well and really pulling ahead of the pack in California, which is a huge state to win, obviously. So hopefully, if you're a Sanders fan, you're hoping anyway he's going to be strong there. But let's talk about the collapse of Joe Biden.
I like that segue. Anyways,
the spectacular collapse of Joe Biden as the Democrats' frontrunner. He never was. He just never was. Okay, he was the frontrunner when people had not even started paying attention yet. And I was telling Paul earlier when he was doing his ideology. You know, I think if Biden had come into this at this point, or like maybe just before Iowa, and just swooped in and said, "Hey, I'm Joe Biden and I'm entering this fucking race," I think maybe he could have got some momentum and won those states, you know, if he timed it just right. But he was just in this too long. He gave us way too much time to scrutinize him. He participated in way too many debates where you could just see that he wasn't fucking there. And they try to blame it on his, I have a stutter. It's like, it's not a stutter, dude.
Yeah, we've been listening to Joe Biden
fucking
talk
circles,
for like
all right?
two generations now.
Oh, he said, it's, you know. What he was trying to say, I read this, was that 99.9% of black voters have not had their say. So he's basically, at this point, his campaign's hinged on the black vote.
He was once the presumptive Democratic nominee, but on Tuesday, Joe Biden fled New Hampshire with his tail between his legs and headed to South Carolina, where he watched his dismal results come in. Sensing a humiliating defeat in the Granite State, Biden's team announced the former vice president was throwing in the towel before the polls had even closed. Spending Tuesday evening at a campaign launch party in Columbia, South Carolina, about 1,000 miles away.
Damn, Joe's dead, dude.
Ouch.
Biden ended up placing fifth in New Hampshire, capturing less than 9% of the vote and none of the state's pledged delegates. Despite the potentially disastrous showing, Biden rallied with supporters in South Carolina, insisting the first two states in the primary are not bellwethers. Tonight, though, we just heard from the first two of 50 states. Just two, Biden said. It ain't over, man. We're just getting started. Political experts, however, saw a campaign with little to offer new voters.
Thank you.
If you're just getting started, you literally tripped at the fucking start of the race. Like, if this is how you start, you're not going to finish well.
Not to mention, like, he's run on... Look, I was Obama's vice president. What was the first state Obama won? Iowa. That set the fucking tone. When Obama won Iowa, people were like, wait a minute, Obama's a real fucking candidate. He's not just this fucking throwaway that everyone's, Obama's not going to have no chance. Secretary Hillary Clinton's in there. She's going to, I guess she wasn't secretary at the point, but Senator Hillary Clinton's going to sweep the fucking primaries.
Say it ain't Joe. Biden's spectacular collapse as Dem leader.
Did I want Weezer to come out with a song called Say It Ain't
look
Joe?
Look at this fucking shit. Biden full fuck. Oh, it's Biden. Bernie's victory, like Bernie ekes out win over Buttigieg in the primary.
Yeah, I've noticed that language being used
a lot too. He barely got it.
Bernie gets a squeaker in Iowa. You know what I mean? Like it just continues.
I'm
like,
sure that if anyone else had won by a small margin,
decisive
that would be
victory
the,
for Buttigieg.
The same language.
Go back and look at the fucking headlines when you know the last election season when Clinton was in the race and shit, and look at the states that she won. And see if they go, Clinton ekes out a victory over challenger Bernie Sanders. No. Clinton wins.
Biden jokingly calls a voter a lying dog-faced pony soldier.
What is what?
At New Hampshire event.
What does that even mean?
He's lost his fucking mind, is
what
it means.
Let's take a look at it.
So. Oh, shit. Joe's taking his jacket off.
Oops.
So how do you explain the performance in Iowa, and why should the voters believe that you can win the national election?
Okay, a pretty valid question.
It's a good question. Number one, Iowa's a Democratic caucus. Ever been to a caucus? No, you haven't. You're a lying dog-faced pony soldier. You said you were. Now you got to be honest. I'm going to be honest with you.
What?
A lion dog-faced pony soldier.
Oh, he's been saying she's like a plant. Okay, I get it. He's trying to say she's like some plant from another campaign or something.
So the comment is a reference...
How did you get that from lying dog-faced pony soldier?
I don't know. The comment is supposedly a reference to a... well, he's used it before. He claims it's from a John Wayne movie. Okay. People have looked into this. No one can find a John Wayne movie with that line in it.
That's how I interpret it, though. I mean, not the John Wayne shit, that like he's basically saying like she's not for real, like you've never been to a caucus, you don't know what you're talking about. It's like you're basically a bullshit, you're asking me a bullshit question.
I've yet to see anybody find the John Wayne clip of John Wayne ever uttering this, by the way. I just want to, maybe somebody's found it.
No one has. That's why I looked into it. I mean, people have looked for this film he's referencing. Nothing, there doesn't seem to be any, John Wayne made a shit ton of movies, so maybe it's one of his more obscure ones or something.
Yeah, but this is the internet now. This is 2020, and right. The internet would have found that.
No one's been able to find it. The media hasn't been able to find it. I haven't seen a single independent source find it. I don't know how fucking strongly people are scouring for it, but, you know.
From a John Wayne movie.
You're a lying dog-faced pony soldier.
Maybe he heard something similar to John Wayne movie and took it like that. I don't know. I mean, maybe he just made it up and that's his fucking... I don't really know. Joe Biden just does such weird shit that it's like... Even referencing a John Wayne movie, it's like John Wayne's been dead for like fucking 50 years, man.
Not in Biden's mind.
I guess in Biden's mind, John Wayne...
He's still the guy that all the little boys want to be when they grow up in Biden's mind.
Maybe so.
Andrew Yang drops out of presidential
race. It was
race.
Really time. After seeing his debate performance, and I mean, look, I've just seen him begging for money. It's like, he actually suspended some campaign staffers, like, without any notice, and just...
Well, it was after Iowa. He just like let go a whole huge chunk.
We talked
of his
about it
team.
On like yeah, like, I think we talked about it last week. Or maybe something.
His momentum is gone. His fun and like it was at the point where he wasn't even raising much money. Like I was seeing emails from him that were like, "Oh man, we're almost out of money and stuff. Like we're missing this goal, we're missing this goal." As soon as I saw like they were missing goals, like financially, I was like, "They're done."
So Andrew Yang dropped out of the presidential race Tuesday shortly after the polls closed in the New Hampshire primary. You know, I am the math guy, and it's clear. It is clear tonight from the numbers that we're not going to win this race, Yang told supporters in Manchester, New Hampshire. I am not someone who wants to accept donations and support in a race that we will not win. Yang's two-year run catapulted the philanthropist
Damn, TJ.
From obscurity into the national spotlight.
Capitulated, huh?
Yang entered the race toward the end of 2017 as an unknown with virtually no donor list. He had neither held nor run for office, and his policy agenda primarily focused on creating a universal basic income of $1,000 for every American over the age of 18. Yang's freedom dividend was such an essential part of his candidacy that his original campaign website was named after it. And, you know, he made that Joe Rogan appearance that catapulted him into the national consciousness in a big way. And I saw it, and I was pretty impressed with him in that interview he did.
But Yang never built on that. Yang essentially was like a one note candidate. He had the UBI idea, which
and
you know,
got tired
from other countries.
You got tired of him pivoting to it with every answer he gave.
That was really like, I mean, the debates are important, but they're not the only thing. But his debate performances really were inconsistent, especially in the last two or three
right.
that he was able to take part in. I felt like he had a lot more energy at the very beginning, and he was probably way more nervous, too, but his message was fresher.
He felt more natural, and I think that he just, like Scotty said, I don't think he properly built on the foundation that he laid out there.
He had a solid foundation,
And it's a shame because if you went to his website, he had literally tons of policy positions that he could have elucidated. And I think that actually, you know, he had some pretty original thoughts on a few different issues. But unfortunately,
He wanted to use like how people are doing, how people are feeling, like a happiness index, like that. That's, I mean, he had some good ideas that, I mean, really like examine them. Like, yeah, I could see that. That makes a lot more sense than just saying like, okay, monetary wealth. Like, how are people actually doing? Are people feel like? Do they feel hopeful? Do they feel that there's different metrics that, you know, people don't necessarily think of when they think about politics or tracking how people are actually doing? Is that, you know, the mental health and the emotional well being of the country. And just after that Joe Rogan appearance, he got a lot of he got this big bump, and people were really interested in him. And just, but every time you saw him on the debate stage, it was like $1,000. At a point, it just felt like he was just trying to give you $1,000 a month.
He would pivot to his, you know, his automation is going to kill this many jobs platform. I really wanted to hear Yang speak on a more diverse set of issues, and especially in this last debate that happened, ABC's right. debate.
And, you know, look,
he was given the opportunity to do that and just didn't right. really take it.
And one of the things is, you know, he wasn't given the same opportunity as a lot of the people on stage because he actually did speak by far the least.
Sure.
So maybe he should have been allowed to speak more, but every time he did speak, it really was not very impressive, at least in that debate. I thought there were debates where he did a pretty decent job of elucidating some of his platform, but
well, we even commented that after the debate, when he was just in his interpersonal interactions with other people on the stage and the other candidates' families, like,
he had way better energy.
He was jumping around like, yeah, this is great, I'm a photobomb this person.
Yeah, and it's like, where was that on the stage?
He was almost
man.
Like this trickster kind of thing going on, where he's like, you know, he's just enjoying the moment, but then on the stage he was just stiff and overprepared.
You know, I really think, you know, Yang's a pretty young dude. He's got his name in the national scene at this point. He might want to take another stab at it at some point in the future. He might even want to try, you know, maybe go for a senatorship or some shit. Because, I mean, you got your name out there now. I don't know. I think that he could. I don't know that we've necessarily heard the last of Andrew Yang, but we've definitely heard the last of him, at least as far as this 2020 campaign is concerned.
Yeah.
Sanders Yang.
I don't think so.
No.
They're too diametrically opposed, because Sanders is essentially moving us a step away from capitalism, whereas I think Yang was more trying to save capitalism.
Isn't that a good thing, though? Like, having people of diverse opinion around you advising you so that you're not, you know...
Yeah, I mean, I wouldn't mind him having a cabinet position. I just don't know about the VP slot.
I've always liked the kind of overtures that some campaigns have made to, especially in VP choice... choosing a candidate that you know, may not be as politically aligned with you, you know what I mean, rather than just a lockstep, you know, party line tower.
I feel like with, in Sanders' case, because of his advanced age, it's like there's a lot more pressure on him to pick someone who's like you can really see as president in that VP slot.
Yeah, the McCain making overtures towards choosing what was that guy's name? Joe. This is like a Jewish senator, Democrat guy.
Lieberman,
yeah. I liked that. I think we need to see more, not less, of that in politics.
Yeah, you could be right about that. I don't know. Another thing I like about Andrew Yang, before we move on, is I did have the sense about him that I don't have from a lot of politicians, that he's an authentic dude. You know, and obviously politics, even if you start off as someone who's authentic, a lot of times it has the tendency of sucking that right out of you. Like, if you look at, even if you go look at Pete Buttigieg, like, a year ago, 2 years ago, very different guy than he is now. A lot more unguarded, a lot more like a real human being. Now he's like a fucking robot. And, you know, I don't think that happened to Yang, but I think maybe that listlessness we saw on the stage was the beginnings of that happening. So he needs to be more mindful of that shit. But he's out of this one, so. So there's this petition on change.org right now to remove Amber Heard from Aquaman 2. It has nearly the 300,000 signatures that it's its goal. And actually, there have been rumblings that the studio has actually considered giving into this. Justification that this change.org petition provides here is that Amber Heard has been exposed as a domestic abuser by Johnny Depp in his $50 million lawsuit. Johnny Depp describes many incidents of domestic abuse that he suffered at the hands of his then wife, Amber Heard, including one incident where she punched him twice in the face and another where she shattered his finger with a vodka bottle and his finger had to be surgically reattached. He will bear the scar from that for the rest of his life. I actually saw a video of him as Jack Sparrow visiting like sick kids in the hospital. And one of the kids asked him, like, what happened to his finger and stuff. And he had to, like, make up some kind of swashbuckling Jack Sparrow story.
Oh.
But the reality is that, you know, he it was damaged in a domestic violence dispute. Assuming that what, you know, he's alleging in his lawsuit is accurate. So the thing about Amber Heard, too, is that she actually Me Too'd Johnny Depp and said he was the abuser. And he got canceled, quote unquote. On Twitter and stuff. I think he lost his role as Jack Sparrow over the accusations.
Well, they want to remove him from Fantastic Beasts 2. They're right. Like, he can't play Grindelwald. He's an abuser. He's a piece of shit.
But, you know, now there's many witnesses that have taken Johnny's side. And there have been, you know, there's photographic evidence of some of the injuries he sustained.
Also here in the second article, it says also Amber Heard was arrested in 2009 for abusing a former domestic partner, Tasia Van Rie. Demonstrating a repeated pattern of abuse by Amber Heard. So, I mean,
and
like,
of course, we also have actual audio of a, I guess, a counseling session somehow
that they
got leaked out.
Well, I heard about this is that it was mutually recorded because in California, it's a two-party consent state.
Okay.
So this is basically audio from one of those sessions.
So this is audio from that session where she basically, you'll see.
Fuck you.
And then I didn't punch you, and then by the way. I'm sorry that I didn't hit you across the face in a proper slap, but I was hitting you. I was not punching you. Babe, you're not punched.
Don't tell me what it feels like to be punched.
You know, even a lot of guys have been around a long time.
No, when you have a closed fist.
You get punched. You got hit. I'm sorry I hit you like this, but I did not punch you. I did not deck you. I was hitting you.
I left last night, Oz. Honestly, I swear to you. Because I just couldn't take the idea of more physicality, more physical abuse on each other. Because had we continued, it would have gotten bad. And baby, I told you this once, and I'm scared to death of it. We are a crime scene right now if we don't get our together.
I mean, that seems to imply that there was a mutual back and forth punch out happening.
Well, a lot of people have stated that basically, like, he would push her away and that he then felt bad for pushing her and stuff. But, I mean, like, there's, like, stories told by eyewitnesses and shit about him just absorbing abuse like a fucking sponge. Now, I'm sure every once in a while he probably did lash out back at her, but it really does seem from the stuff that I've looked into that she was the major aggressor in this shit.
She's the primary aggressor.
Now, I don't know, because I wasn't there. I didn't see it. I didn't live through it. I don't know, but that's what I've heard. That's what I've Amber heard, if you will.
Well, the people that portrayed her as an innocent victim were clearly incorrect. Let's just say that. That's definitive.
I mean, at the very least, what you have here is a
kind of a
mutual,
comorbid,
toxically abusive relationship. But it really kind of seems to me from various accounts that, you know, she was the primary aggressor and that he was probably just defending himself. But, you know, as a man, you're not allowed to defend yourself. Because then you're, they both did things. It's like, well, you know, she's hitting him, and he pushes her away.
So, but people's answer to this is to, like, excise her digitally from a movie that nobody cares about?
Well, I mean, remember, the first Aquaman was a huge hit.
Was it?
Yeah.
Not like, in my world, it wasn't.
Well, in the actual world of, you know, money and stuff.
Tell me about it. Tell me about this other world that exists. Because in my world, this was a belly flop of epic proportions.
Let's see. I'll pull up a box office on that.
I think it made $1 billion.
Aquaman box.
I mean, it did big box office.
How much of that was Chinese dollars, though?
I don't know. It did.
We can look.
It did 1.148 billion.
See how much it was China.
Okay. Let's see.
Because they actually have numbers for that now. I think it's maybe 150 million, I would guess.
Let me put it up here.
And if it did almost 1.2 billion.
Domestic, about 335.
Yeah. Okay.
International about.
So the lion's share of that money came from places with totally different fucking expectations for film.
So let's see.
Than where I live.
France, it made $29 million.
Wow.
Germany, $24 million. Italy, 12. Let's see. Where's China in all this?
Yeah, keep going down. It's
UK,
Asia.
6.5 million.
Asia Pacific.
Here we go.
Australia, 30 million. Where is China? Okay, China.
China.
Yeah.
Ooh, oh, down here. 291 million, dude.
So it made almost as much in China as it did here.
Ugh.
But so it did about the same in China, which has a higher population, but probably less movie theaters. But it looked like it did well in a lot of European countries. It did well in Mexico. It looked like it did pretty well pretty much everywhere.
Gross.
So yeah, it was a pretty popular film. I don't know. I've never seen it. I've heard it's all right, but I'm not
I've seen
it.
Parts of
it. I ain't gonna watch it.
Though. I don't think it's really that great of a movie.
If they want to get me to see an Aquaman movie, bring back the real Aquaman. He's got to be blonde headed. He's got to be lame
and gay.
Yeah. UPS contract worker fighting for his life after conveyor belt accident. Officials said.
Do they have a UPS ad in front of this?
Maybe.
This is ad one of one.
I hope not. I hope US,
please.
UPS
please
is not
let
that
it
dumb.
Be an ad.
I don't think it's actually playing the ad.
No.
Whatever. Who cares? It doesn't.
That's just great. I'm pretty sure it's a UPS ad.
A man is fighting for his life after getting caught in a conveyor belt at a United Parcel Service facility in Kansas City, Missouri, officials said. Emergency crews were dispatched to the scene on Monday evening and found the man unresponsive. They removed him from the factory belt and transported him to a local hospital for treatment of life-threatening injuries, according to Kansas City, Missouri Police Department. His identity and current condition was unknown. Police told ABC there is no criminal investigation underway, suggesting the incident was a freak accident. When asked for comment on Tuesday morning, a UPS spokesperson told ABC News, "We are very concerned for our vendor's employee who is maintaining equipment at one of our facilities. We are working with the responding authorities in their investigation."
I mean, it's just an example for me of like how we need to automate this shit. How automation needs to be our number one priority, because a lot of people don't realize a lot of jobs are really dangerous. Any job you have, and it's tons of people that have these types of jobs, where you're working around large machinery, like this conveyor belt pictured here, or you know, anything. There's just a million jobs like this. You could just get mangled at a moment's notice. If
yeah,
you're
I mean,
careful.
back before it was shut down, I used to watch some stuff on the Watch People Die subreddit. And there was a lot of industrial accidents on there. And I saw some pretty grisly footage of people
getting caught in these. Well,
getting various encounters with these large industrial machines.
The worst ones are places where like, they're like making food products and people fall into like vats or grinders or whatever it is. And it's just like,
oh, yeah,
there's nothing
like,
left of them.
I've seen some really nasty shit.
People get baked alive in ovens baking like, you know, tuna or something.
Saw some dude get crushed in like a hydraulic press kind of thing. Saw some dude get stuck on a... like a spinning thing.
If you see someone go through those machines, it's horrible. Like someone just, it's like the most brutal way to die. If someone gets caught in a machine, it's just like crushed into like a liquid or a paste.
Yeah, because this machine don't stop for nothing. You know, it's going. So this is just another example of you know, the dangerous conditions that a lot of Americans work in.
Even just like people moving shit for like Amazon, those factories, dude, there's so many injuries, like just moving these huge pallets of fucking boxes or whatever the fuck it is.
Oh, yeah.
And someone just falls on you and kills you or severely injures you.
And plus they keep those people working so long and so hard, and they're scared to even take bathroom breaks and all this other stuff.
Well, because they actually don't work for the companies. They're actually temporary employees. It's just a giant scam. They have real employees. You have to go there every day, but have no stability, and the company offers them no benefits.
Yeah, good old Amazon.
And they have to share their money with the temp agency, too. So,
in 100 years, this fucking headline is going to be, Unit B-59-2 was damaged structurally in a mechanical failure. He was completely rebuilt, and everything's fine.
This is why we must return to the days of human labor. So innocent machines are not harmed.
Put the human back in the factory. Please, I'd be crushed to death.
Shut up, human. Are you kidding me? Those stupid monkeys would not be able to construct the... You know, whatever. More than 100 U.S. troops suffered traumatic brain injuries.
Excuse me.
In Iran...
Excuse me. Yes. Headaches.
Oh.
Headaches.
In Iran strike, military says.
That's some headaches, TJ.
TBI cases jumped more than 50% from the 64 reported. Trump previously downplayed reports of brain injury. The number of U.S. service members diagnosed with traumatic brain injury, TBI, stemming from Iran's missile attack on a base in Iraq last month has shot up to more than 100, the Pentagon said Monday. The department said 109 military members who have been treated for mild TBI, a significant increase over the 64 reported a little over a week ago. The number of injuries has been steadily increasing since the Pentagon began releasing data on the injuries about a week after the January 8th attack at Al-Asad Air Base in Iraq. Pentagon officials have warned that the number will continue to change. The department said 76 of the service members have returned to duty, while 26 are in Germany or the United States for treatment, and another 7 are on their way from Iraq to Germany for evaluation and treatment. Donald Trump had previously said that the U.S. suffered no casualties from the attack, which was a reprisal for the U.S. drone strike assassination of Iranian General Qassem Soleimani. Questioned later about reports of brain injury, Trump downplayed their severity. I heard that they had headaches and a couple of other things, but I would say, and I can report, it is not very serious.
Oh. Of course. Somebody should just lay a pipe upside fucking Trump's head and then just be like, get up, it's not serious. You're fine. A little headache.
Little headache, that's all. Yeah, it's nice when you're in ivory tower. To make those kind of proclamations.
I love that this guy is the patriotic candidate too. You know what I mean? He's hugging the American flag.
Ah, they just a bunch of crybabies.
USA being chanted over and over at his rallies and shit. And this is how he like openly treats soldiers. So
they got hurt. Big deal.
How do you think he talks about these people when the mics aren't on? You know what I mean? If he can't headaches, they've got traumatic brain injury. Yeah, they got a headache. Whatever.
Take some fucking Tylenol and get back to the fucking front lines, bitch.
Give that soldier an aspirin.
Reaper of death.
Newfound cousin of T-Rex discovered in Canada, Scotty.
See, this is exciting for me because we usually don't get like big badass carnivore new dinosaurs. You know what I mean?
True.
When you hear about new dinosaurs, it's like this cousin of the Brontosaurus. You know what I mean? It's just like, oh. Or this tiny bird, chicken-sized dinosaur. It's like, this is a new fucking badass. And they call it the Reaper of Death.
The fossils of a newly discovered Tyrannosaurus Rex cousin, a vicious meat-eating dinosaur with serrated teeth and a monstrous face that scientists are calling the Reaper of Death, has been discovered in Alberta, yes. Canada, at 79.5 million years ago. I'm not even going to try it, is the oldest known named Tyrannosaur on record from North America, a region that includes Canada and the northern part of the western United States, said researchers of a new study on the discovery. It's also the first previously unknown Tyrannosaur species to be discovered in Canada in 50 years. It definitely would have been quite an imposing animal, roughly 8 feet tall at the hips. Study lead researcher Jared Voris, a doctoral student of paleontology at the University of Calgary in Alberta, told Live Sciences. T. digruterum lived during the Cretaceous period, the last period of the dinosaur age, which lasted from 145 million to 65 million years ago. The imposing beast had a mouthful of steak knife-like teeth. That were about 2.7 inches long.
Dude, I'm just imagining a dinosaur with steak knives for teeth, dude.
From snout to tail, the dinosaur measured about 26 feet long, or about the length of 4 king-size mattresses lined up end to end. The researchers have only 2 partial skulls and jaws of the newfound Tyrannosaur, so they couldn't estimate its mass, as the hind limbs are needed for that calculation. But the unearthed fossils were enough to define the creature as a newfound species, they said. Like other Tyrannosaurs, the Reaper of Death is the Greek god of death. Therestes is Greek for Reaper, which is how the team derived, I'm going to try it, Thanatotherestes.
Yep, I think you got it.
Had strange bumps on its skull that gave it a monstrous appearance, but it also had a one-of-a-kind feature, a distinct set of vertical ridges that ran from its eyes along its upper snout. These ridges are not like anything we've ever seen before in other Tyrannosaur species, Voris said. Exactly what the ridges do, we're not quite sure.
I know what they do. They allow it to fucking get its face in that carcass deeper. You know what I mean? Dude, we need to, like, I don't know why we're researching bombs and guns and drones and shit. We just need to bring these back and train them. Can you imagine unleashing about 100 of these on any fucking city? It'd be over, man. Oh, I love these fucking old dinosaurs, man. I wish I could teleport myself back to the fucking Cretaceous period and be eaten by one of these motherfuckers.
Oh, dude, yeah, this motherfucker's looking for a Paul. It's like, fat and slow, perfect.
They could just look at Paul and be like, eh.
Yeah, what if they like looked at you, Paul, took a bite out of you?
I'm better than that.
I doubt that.
Took a bite out of you and just went like, meh, nothing tastes that good.
Yeah, I'd be dead anyway.
Ancient Egyptian board game of death. Identified by scientists.
Sick.
An Egyptian board game of death was used to communicate with the dead about 3,500 years ago. The game, called Senet, was played at all levels of Egyptian society from when it first emerged 5,000 years ago until it fell out of favor about 2,500 years ago. Now one expert believes he has discovered a Senet board from when the game took on a more spiritual hue. Experts who study ancient Egypt believe Senet was played by two competitors, each with five pawns that were placed on a grid of 30 squares arranged in three rows of 10. Then, by a roll of the dice, players would move their pawns, with their goal being to have all five of your pawns reach the finish point at the lower right corner of the board.
I see.
However, over time, Egyptian texts reportedly began to describe the game as depicting the movement of the soul through the Egyptian realm of the dead, which we learned about in our Heaven episode.
That's true.
A Senet board located in the Rosicrucian Egyptian Museum could show this evolution. The board features a hieroglyphic symbol on one square for water, which is believed by archaeologists to indicate a lake or river that Egyptians felt the souls encountered on its journey through the underworld. And here's the board here.
Yeah, you can see how like all these ancient cultures influence themselves spiritually too, because that's a, you know, a common Greek and Roman.
Yeah, the river Styx. Yeah. Yeah.
So, I don't know. I want to play this, man. I'll beat you guys' fucking ass at Senet, dude.
Yeah.
I will get my fucking ancestors across the river before you do. Garen fucking Teed, dude. You saw how I played the fucking board game that we did.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't want to bet against
perfect rolls.
Just based on that.
Yeah, the dice were ever
perfect rolls, baby.
Favor, dude. Florida mom tackles otter to save teenage daughter and dog from attack.
What kind of fucking otter was it?
Super
a vicious
otter.
One.
An otter in Florida learned not to mess with mom when it attacked a 17-year-old girl and her dog and got thrown out of the family's house for its trouble. So it went in their house. Gwen Ewert, 17, let the family's French bulldog Scooter out on the back porch just before dawn Tuesday in Lakeland, Florida. She panicked when she heard fighting coming from the porch. I sprinted to the back door. I was like, Scooter, all I saw was a big black ball just all over the place. So he stumbled in the door. I tried to shut it as fast as possible, but then the otter got stuck, Gwen Ewert said.
So it tried to chase him into the house.
The commotion woke the whole house, and Gwen's mother, Cassina Ewert, burst in, tackling the otter. He and the dog are in a big tangled tumbleweed spinning around, Cassina Ewert said. I snatched it by the tail, and then I held it up like a prize. The otter's going crazy. It was clawing at me and grabbing onto the backs of the furniture in my house.
Oh my God.
Jesus.
I wish there was video of this event. Cassina Ewert tossed the otter back outside before discovering it had bitten her daughter in the leg. They then took a trip to the hospital. She got a shot for rabies and a booster shot. Scooter also received a rabies shot. Well, he'd received one a few days before the attack, but he was put under quarantine as a precaution. Cassina Ewert realizes tackling an aggressive otter in her home may not have been the smart thing to do, but her motherly instinct took over.
Damn. Stay away from otters, I guess.
Yeah.
Man, you gotta do what you gotta fucking do. If an otter comes and attacks you in your house, I mean, what the fuck are you gonna do? Like, maybe it's not the smart
move
thing
out.
To do. Move out.
Move out immediately.
Paul just moves. He's like, I can't take this. You have the house.
Grab
can't
my
take
bug out
fucking
bag
otters
and I'm
no
out
more.
The door. It's the otter's house now.
I can't believe Paul would do that.
The fucking otter lives there now.
No, man. I don't wanna fuck with it, man. I'm gone.
One day I'm gonna fucking, I'm gonna get a knock at the door and Paul's like, yeah, I gotta move in for a while. Otter stole my fucking apartment, damn it.
Yeah, dude. Fucking, it's his place now.
Fucking otter, bitch. What you gonna do? Man, I wish there was video of this. I really do.
That would be nice.
This is gonna be our last pleb story of the day.
Ugh, finally.
Utah sending state employees to Mexico for lower prescription prices.
Can you really blame them?
Salt Lake City. Anne Lavelle had never owned a passport before last year. Now the 60-year-old teacher is a frequent flyer.
traveling every few months to Tijuana, Mexico, to buy medication for her rheumatoid arthritis with tickets paid for by the state of Utah's public insurer. Lavelle is one of about 10 state workers participating in a year-old program to lower prescription drug costs by having public employees buy their medication in Mexico at a steep discount compared to U.S. prices. Okay. So, this is fine with a lot of people, I guess, right?
This is good.
This is a great system. This is not broken at all. This is fine.
Commonly needed medication is cheaper than a round trip ticket to Mexico every month.
Fucking 2 months or whatever the fuck. So let's see, how big of a difference is it? Blah, 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 blah. In one long, exhausting day, Lavelle flies from Salt Lake City to San Diego. Then an escort picks her up and takes her across the border to a Tijuana hospital where she gets a refill on her prescription. After that, she's shuttled back to the airport and heads home. Lavelle had been paying $450 in copays every few months for her medication, though she said it would have increased to some $2,400 if she had not started traveling to Mexico. Without the program, she would not be able to afford the medicine she needs. "This is the drug that keeps me functioning, working," said Lavelle, who works at an early intervention program for deaf students that's part of the Utah Schools for the Deaf and Blind. "I think if I wasn't on this drug, I'd be on disability rather than living my normal life."
She fucking literally she has a job, and it's cheaper at this point in the land of capitalism to go to Mexico to buy the drug, or Canada.
If it was cheaper to go to Canada, I assume she'd be going to Canada, right?
Well, Mexico's closer, so it makes more sense, I'm sure,
I guess. Utah's kind of right there in the middle between them, isn't it? Am I wrong about that?
No, Utah's probably closer to Mexico.
The cost difference is so large that the state's insurance program for public employees can pay for each patient's flight, give them a $500 per trip bonus, and still save tens of thousands of dollars.
That's ridiculous.
Tens of thousands of dollars.
It's absolutely for the same
drugs.
Ridiculous.
For the same fucking drugs. How does that make any fucking sense to anyone? For the same these other countries could just do it cheaper magically because they have a magical facility. You know what they say? Oh, it's because we don't know. They might not be manufactured the same way or be as safe or whatever. It's like, come on.
It's a total fucking nightmare.
it's bullshit. It's total bullshit. People in this country are just getting fucked over and they're helped by the healthcare system in every facet, and it's just obvious. And people that talk about, like, we can't change, like, Medicare for All is bad or this is bad. It's like, the reality right now is it's cheaper for people to literally get on a fucking plane and go somewhere else to get their health care.
Yep.
But you don't see that. But we have the best system in the world. Explain that, motherfuckers. Why are they going to another country then? Because they can actually afford it. Because people there can afford their fucking health care.
Now, the people that are getting American rheumatoid arthritis drugs, though, they're getting the best version of those drugs.
Oh, my hands feel so good.
I bet you didn't know that.
So, coming up for our patrons, and they'll get to see it immediately. Obviously, you plebs don't get to see it. We're going to look at a couple of movie trailers. We got some racial insensitivity coming your way.
Whoa.
Oh, my favorite kind of insensitivity.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. We got some Florida Man. What's he up to? We're going to find out. What's going on with Jussie Smollett? That case is back in the news.
Sure that isn't the racial insensitivity story that you were talking about?
Maybe it is. I was thinking about a different one, but, you know, that works, too. We got some movie news. We got some ridiculous bullshit going on. I don't know how to describe this story without spoiling it.
I know Cheetah's not fucking stoned, but he kind of looks stoned. You read that headline, I was like, what the fuck is...
Because I'm trying to figure out some way to fucking give him a hint about it.
Look, the stories of wonder ahead.
We got a couple of stories about some ridiculous school policies coming out. And we got some debtors' prison bullshit going on.
We got all kinds of shit, dude.
Sweet.
We got some updates on Jordan Peterson's condition and a bunch of other bullshit, too.
All bullshit.
And we got some Trump shit. I only actually have one Trump thing for today. What? Amazingly enough.
That Trump quote is getting pretty fucking... You're getting close, TJ. We got a little Trump.
First up is these trailers, but first we say goodbye to the plebs. Bye, plebs. Adieu. Become Boo. Patrons. Boo, get out of here. You're dead. You're dead to us. Get out. This is all you get for free, man. Get lost.